Hour number two of the program here. Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle abbreviated shows this week with our good buddy Chris Goforth doing the SEC Media Day recap show from 6 to 7. But I got you for the full three, 7 to 10, right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are minutes away from the Home Run Derby getting started here. Oren, you know who I could have used more of in my life? Pat McAfee. He's the one doing the on-field introductions for ESPN right now.
Oh, boy.
Really just don't think we have enough Pat McAfee in our lives. So I'm really glad to see, you know, the little guys out there getting some exposure and, you know, paving the way for us.
I hope he makes it.
Me too. You know?
I really hope he makes it.
You see the other news in our industry today, by the way?
We had some let goes, if you will, over at the FS1, sir.
Yeah.
They cleared a lot of the morning show house.
There's a couple of openings there. Speaking of TV personalities. All right. Oren Romain, I said I'd see it. I saw it. And now I'm here to talk about it. Dun, 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 dun. Dun, dun, dun. I saw Superman over the weekend. God love my girlfriend, man. She's the best. She got me, her mom, her dad, and her two brothers matching Superman t-shirts that we all wore to the movies. And then her mom, love her too. Shout out Mrs. Doyle. She got us all matching socks, Superman socks to wear to the movie theater. So we were decked out, all of us, in Superman shirts and Superman socks. It was good, okay? That's my first off the rip. I'll say this. It was good. Now, I had this is Oren why. In 2025, you got to be careful reading the reviews, because most people are well-intentioned, I would say, but there are some pitfalls, and overhype is certainly one of them. Was this a good movie? Yes, it was. I might even call it a breath of fresh air, because it certainly has a different tone than the darker Superman movies of the past decade. It has some fun side characters. Probably a few too many of them. At times, it felt like the movie wasn't even about Superman. It was about the world around Superman. And I think that's okay for a sequel, once we've established ourselves Superman. But this movie went, I think, a little too far out of its way to be like, we're here not to just give you another Superman origin story, which I liked because it was not a Superman origin story, because there's been a million Superman origin stories. They don't need to do it again. We all know the deal. Superhero, baby, crash lands on Earth, parents sent him away as their planet was getting destroyed, yada, yada, yada. We all know that story. We don't need that story retold for the 1 millionth time. But the story they did decide to tell, it was interesting, but there was a little too much going on for me. I would have much preferred a scaled back version of this movie. There were too many side characters. There were too many villainous characters. There was too many... One thing's happening here while another thing's happening there. See, while another thing's happening there.
I heard the side characters were the show stealers. So I heard the opposite.
Okay, yes, they were. But, Oren, that's the problem. It's supposed to be a movie about Superman.
That's fair.
It's not supposed to be a movie about his dog. And the dog is cute, and the dog has some really fun scenes. But it's not a movie about Superman's dog. It's not a movie about the side characters that are also in this universe. That and I'm not giving anything away, by the way. These are all things that have been in the previews. You know, Green Lantern's in it. You know, Hawkgirl's in it. You know, Mr. Terrific's in it. Mr. Terrific, by far, the best side character in this movie. It's not close. He was really cool. His powers are really cool. His story is cool. And he's just got, by far, the most swag. So he was cool. If it was just him, I would have been like, that's fine. But there's too many other people and things. And there's robots and there's dogs and there's side characters. And I'll just leave you with this. Lois Lane has fit a certain stereotype and archetype for a long time. She was the damsel in distress. She's the intrepid reporter. She's in a quiet moment, the one that could get through to Superman. And you do have all of that featured in this movie. But the amount that they go to prove to you that she's more than that becomes so blatantly unrealistic, Oren, that to me it distracted from the movie. Like, she, in what they need to do to defeat the bad guys in this movie, she has a part in it. But her part is not, it's not realistic. And to me, it was just James Gunn, who's the director, going way too far out of his way to do that for her. I thought you could have had her be a side hero, if that's what you wanted to do, which I'm completely fine with. There were ways to do it in which she could be celebrated, but not, you know, basically put in a position that they call them meta-humans in this movie about. And I got a couple of people that are hitting me up on Twitter at C Thomas Radio, like talking about the comics and stuff like that. Guys, there's 100,000 different versions of Superman. You don't think I understand that? The Superman comic is what, over 100 years old at this point? Close? I mean, when did Superman first appear in comics? So there's been, you know, let's see. 1938, folks. Superman's been doing this superhero thing for a long time. There's been every iteration. There's been every villain. There's been every story told. And I get that. But let's be honest, folks. You and me, the average fan, and I like to think I'm decently plugged in to the superhero stuff, I'm not following from that perspective. I'm going to the movie and watching it, what they put in front of the screen. And so are you, for the most part. I would say out of everybody, the $200 million worth of tickets it made this weekend at the box office, 97% of them have a base knowledge even less than I do talking to you about this stuff. I watch all the superhero movies. I have read some comics in my life. To cover whatever adaptation this version is going for, your average fan base is going to have no idea about that. They know Superman. They don't know Mr. Terrific. They don't know Hawkgirl much, maybe from Justice League. They know the Green Lantern, but there's just so many different versions of the Green Lantern. That the Green Lantern in this movie is not the Green Lantern I grew up with. Not hashtag not my Green Lantern. That got a chuckle out of Oren. So again, it was good. It wasn't great. I had fun. I enjoyed it. And I just gave you my nitpicks. I will give it, Oren, a 7.5 out of 10 is my official rating. Absolutely go see it in the theaters. It looks great. Sounds great. There's a ton of action. There's a ton of Easter eggs. There's a ton of intrigue. I thought Nicholas Hoult was an amazing Lex Luthor, probably my favorite. He really killed it. Did much better than Jesse Eisenberg, in my opinion, who just didn't strike the right note for me. So, yeah, I definitely recommend it. Go see it. That is my Superman review. Final verdict, 7.5 out of 10. Cliff Notes, I just wish there was a little less going on. I wish it focused more on Superman and less on some of the side characters. And I wasn't a huge fan of the role that they gave Lois Lane in terms of helping to defeat the bad guys in this one. I just thought it was a little outsized, a little outstretched. 404-726-0929, but good movie overall. Ton of fun. Go see it with your friends and family at the theater. All right, when we get back, Dan Ugla. What did he have to say about MLB All-Star Weekend here in Atlanta? Plus, we'll get some true and false questions in as well. It is Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle with you till 10. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. The Home Run Derby is officially underway. James Wood is at the plate right now, has 7 dingers so far in the first round. We'll keep you posted how our boy Matt Olson does. Cool gesture, Oren. I don't know if you saw this. He's wearing number 44 tonight to honor Hank, which is pretty sweet. And by the way, I was not alone. Pat McAfee getting universally crushed on Twitter right now for being his dramatic, over-the-top self at Truist Park. Although I will say, I listened to it. There's a clip online. He did do a very good job of hyping up Matt Olson. I will say that. So he knew how to play to the home crowd, which is good for him. All right, let's hear a couple of things from Chipper Jones, and then I'll let you hear my conversation from Murphs with Dan Ugla, 3-time All-Star, All-Star here with the Braves, talking about this current squad and all things All-Star week here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Chip was talking about Ronald Acuña Jr. Best thing to do for him, as we know, prioritize health over showmanship.
I've said, you know, all along that I feel that Ronald Acuña Jr. is one of the most, if not the most talented person to ever put a Braves uniform on. He has, you know, he's got tools in his tool belt that, you know, other players have, but he's got all the tools, you know. I mean, there have been guys here that have hit 40 home runs. There have been guys here that have stolen 70 bases. There have been guys here that have won a ton of gold gloves. But none of them can do it all. None of them have done all that. So Ronald has a very bright future. If we can keep his knees under him and keep him healthy, I think he's in for a long and illustrious career.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think the collective sentiment was it stinks that he's not doing this tonight, but if it means he's healthy long term, we're just fine with it. Chipper was also reminiscing on the last out in 95 in the World Series and how that's bonded them together.
Watching him run over from center field, you know, into the gap and just glide, you know, to it and, you know, knowing that he's got a beat on it and that this puppy's over, you know. It was like it was happening in slow motion. I know yeah. It probably took that ball forever to get out there to him. But when he closed it, it was just, you know, I don't think we could ever imagine the amount of the relief for a lot of the younger guys and just the elation. You know, I mean, we start playing this game Valentine's Day, and we don't end until Halloween. You know, that's a long time of living together and playing together and eating together and doing, you know, everything for it to culminate right there and be the last team standing. You know, we play a team sport. That's the ultimate. All the individual stuff pales in comparison to what happened for us that night.
And, of course, Marquise Grissom was a part of this weekend. Oh, he was the one of the coaches in the Futures game, which is pretty cool to see. One more from Chipper Jones, and then we'll let you hear my conversation with Dan Ugla live at Murph's over the weekend. Really, really good catching up with Dan. He was really fun. He brought his little son, Woods, over too, and he was adorable. You'll hear that coming up here in just a second. The question on everybody's mind, if this is Snit's last year, would Chipper step into the role?
You have to be completely committed to be a coach or a manager. And I just don't know that I could serve the spot as well as I should, because I'm, quite frankly, being pulled in more important directions, you know, for me. So it's besides, you know, I keep asking myself, why would any general manager, especially here in Atlanta, want to hire me for a fireable spot, you know, for a fireable job? Like, would you want to be have to be the general manager that has to fire me? That's a bad PR move, if you, you know, I mean, if you're asking me. So I think I've got my foot in the door just enough where both sides kind of dig it right now.
And there's that. Chipper Jones will not be your manager of the Atlanta Braves. All right, let's hear my conversation with Dan Uggla. Pleased with what we had to talk about. It was a really fun chat with the former Braves all-star second baseman. Right now, let's welcome in our very, very special guest, Dan Uggla, former MLB All-Star with your Atlanta Braves, a three-time All-Star in his career. Dan, a pleasure to have you on. Chris Thomas tonight, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, and he's brought his – is this your son with you?
Yes, sir.
What's his name?
What's your name, Wood?
Wood. Oh, that's an awesome name. We'll make sure to get a couple of questions in for him as well. But first of all, Dan, how cool is it just to be back here in the A for All-Star Weekend?
Awesome, awesome. We actually live here, so it's we're
there you go.
Not too far away. Made it nice and easy, and just, you know, it's awesome to see all the fans, everybody just out here.
So did they give you, because I know trying to get in here was a little, did they give you the back access roads or
they
something?
They did. They hooked it up pretty good.
All right, so what are your fondest memories here of playing for the Braves and being an All-Star?
Oh, man, just all the fans, all the support, all my teammates, everybody in the organization, you know, from top to bottom, Terry McGurk, you know, Freddie Gonzalez, Frank Wren, all those dudes. Then all my teammates, Chip, Brian McCann, Freddie Freeman, Tim Hudson, just the list goes on and on. David Ross, oh, my gosh.
When you see those guys on a weekend like this, do the memories and the playing together just come back like that, like old times?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, just seeing all the fans, you run into guys, Mark Wallers, and, you know, there's some really cool people here. I saw Rafael Belliard just, you know, blasting past dudes I watched growing up.
Yeah. So when you're in the – so take us inside the clubhouse when you're doing an All-Star and you are being a player representing Major League Baseball. How cool is it to be surrounded by the best in the game for a weekend like that?
Yeah, it's beyond words. You're in there hanging out with everybody, and then after a few minutes of being in the clubhouse, you realize that every single dude in there is just like you. They're cool. They're down to earth. They're just as excited to be there as the rest of us are. You know, and then there's – you know, the guys that have been there 8, 9, 10, 11 times and just see the professionalism in all of them, you know. They're probably not as excited as, you know, say I was, but my first couple times, but it's awesome to be a part of.
Talking with Dan Uggla, former MLB All-Star, three-time All-Star, and an All-Star here in Atlanta for the Braves, along with Woods, who's hanging out here with me, too, on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, getting a nice couple of selfies in there that we'll be sure to check out online. All right, so when it comes to, unfortunately, this year's Braves squad, obviously nobody saw this coming, but what do you think are some of the keys to get these guys back on track for the second half?
I think, you know, just keep hustling, keep playing hard, staying positive, and you know something will happen. Someone will catch fire, and that'll get contagious. Man, just staying positive and upbeat.
When it comes to watching a guy here like Ronald Acuña Jr. in Atlanta, what is that like for you, being a former Brave, watching a guy that's able to take over the sport like that?
Ooh, I'll tell you what, man, he is just one of those rare talents that comes once every generation. Do it all, you know, just. I mean, when I say all, do it all. Everybody's seen him play, knows what he can do. He's, you know, brings it every single night. You know, just need to. We want to keep him healthy all the time. You know?
Yeah,
he's got to be there.
I know he's obviously no longer participating in the Home Run Derby, but a guy like Matt Olson filling in, he's got the perfect swing for it. I think he has a real good chance. What do you think?
Oh, 100%. He's got just so much power, foul pole to foul pole. And he's got one of the smoothest, sweetest swings in the game, man. Just, you know, he gets in a groove. That'll be a fun one to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he, again, that swing is just perfect for what this Home Run Derby requires. Did you ever participate in one?
I did.
And how was that experience?
Oh, it was one of the best ever.
Yeah.
It was 2008 at Yankee Stadium. you know, just taking batting practice in front of, you know, 50-something thousand
people. That was the Josh Hamilton.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was crazy. I remember that like it was yesterday. That was a crazy home run derby. So when it comes to All-Star festivities, what are some of your favorite things to participate in throughout the weekend? I know here in Atlanta for Truist Park, it is completely decked out here, pillar to post.
It really is. You know, just doing this, getting to experience all the – you know, everything they have here. I mean, I don't know if you went inside or not, but it's absolutely nuts.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And then, obviously, the Home Run Derby and All-Star Game. Just kind of being around the buzz and seeing the excitement on everybody's faces. It's super cool.
I have a feeling I know what the answer is going to be because it's almost always the exact same thing. But what do you miss most about the game?
My teammates, man. Yeah,
there it is.
My teammates.
There it is. The clubhouse. That's what I hear every time. What is that camaraderie and that bonding like? Because you're on the 162 games, 180 days. You see them more than you see your family.
You do. You do. You're around them every day. You know, you hang out on the road. You're in the clubhouse. You're going to dinners. You're just, you know, you're battling together. You're, you know, your highs and lows are just they're all together. So, and they're the only ones that kind of know exactly kind of what you're going through, good or bad.
Another team that you played for, get your opinion on it in the NL East. The Marlins are doing something a little crazy right now. They won 10 out of 11 games recently. It's a franchise that has certainly had its highs and lows. What do you make of the current state of the Fish?
No, I love it. I love it. You know, I was there 5 years. I always pull for them. Happy they're doing great. You know, they've got some excitement going on down there.
Yeah, they got a lot of young talent. They actually have a better record than the Braves.
I know.
All right, so Woods, is he a baseball man himself?
Yeah.
What position do you play, sir?
Second pitcher and outfield.
Second base, so he takes – so is Pops giving you the grounders and the stingers and the routine balls and everything like that?
Yeah.
All right, so when we get him to the All-Star game one day, we're gonna have to have the A on that. He's going to have to come here and serve his time with Atlanta if he makes it to the big leagues. We love to see that. Well, who's your favorite player?
My dad.
Oh, how sweet. Look at that. Who's your favorite player playing now, if you had to pick one?
Freddie Freeman.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a – I don't know if does Woods know that's a little sensitive subject around these parts.
He calls him Uncle Freddy.
Well, there you go. We wish Freddy all the best. Well, Dan, it's been a pleasure, man. Appreciate you stopping by. Enjoy the rest of the weekend.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
Good stuff there from Dan Ugla and his son Woods. Somebody's got to tell him. And I don't think it's going to be Pops. All right, when we get back, let's keep the SEC Media Week coverage going. Our good buddy Connor Riley stopped by Dukes and Bell. We'll let you hear that conversation coming up as we prepare for Kirby and Company to speak tomorrow right here in Atlanta on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Yeah, a lot of the schedule dynamics with the SEC as far as going to an 8-game schedule or a 9-game schedule I think are tied into the college football playoff scenario. And if there is a world where they go to the 4 automatic qualifiers, which is the Big Ten's preferred playoff format, you might see the SEC move to a 9-game schedule. Now, I don't think Georgia wants to go to a 9-game SEC schedule. I think they prefer to remain at 8 games and play big out-of-conference games, Clemson and past years, Oregon as well. Obviously, they play Georgia Tech every year. Whereas if they go to the 5-11 model, 5 automatic qualifiers, 11 wildcard teams, the top-ranked 11 teams, I think that's how you see the SEC stay at an 8-game schedule. And once that gets ironed out, the college football playoff schedule, then you have sort of what you think the SEC is going to do from a conference scheduling standpoint. The problem is that they have to make a decision, I believe, by November 1st, as far as what the future college football playoff scenario is going to be. And there is a world where the SEC may have to make a conference scheduling decision before that playoff decision is finalized.
We were just talking about it earlier in the show, Connor. Is the biggest problem, I think, for the SEC, there's a lack of uniformity as far as the decision-making with the College Football Playoff Committee? And it just seemed like last year, early on and late, they just didn't seem to really respect the conference and strength of schedule.
No, and you're absolutely right, Mike. And that's the difference. Because in the SEC, you know, Oklahoma, Florida, those are teams that were hovering around 500 for most of last year. But because of the way that they spend, the way that they recruit, their fan-based expectations, they expect to be in a college football playoff every year. And if those are your 9th and 10th best teams, you're just operating at a different level of challenge compared to the Big Ten, which really, in my opinion, only has 4 or 5 teams on an annual basis that are saying right now, hey, we're able to contend for a college football playoff spot on a yearly basis. And so because of that, when you factor in that the SEC schedule and the difficulty of which teams had to go through was just not respected last year, I think that's a big reason why you see some hesitancy to adopt other leagues' models when they very clearly don't respect what the SEC is doing. And then going potentially to a nine-game schedule, they're voluntarily making their own schedules harder. And if there's not going to be a reward for that, as there wouldn't be, you understand why some schools, Georgia in particular, are hesitant to add that extra conference game.
We're talking with Connor Riley from Dog Nation. He's in town as well as the SEC Media Days are going on. So I think Brian Kelly's on the hot seat. That's where I'm at. I think LSU has to be in the playoff this year, and I think they got to be a real contender. He avoided a little bit of this today, didn't he? He was talking about academics and all this stuff. I'm like, come on, Brian Kelly. What did you think?
I think that Kelly's in a very interesting position where this is year four at LSU. You know, he's had to deal with the transfer portal. They've done a much better job of adjusting to that this cycle. They've got one of, in my opinion, the best returning quarterback in the conference in Garrett Nussmeier. They have produced elite wide receivers on a consistent basis now. And there's the thought that, okay, if you can't do it this year, where Georgia doesn't seem to be the same juggernaut, Alabama is not the juggernaut they have been in years past, there's an opportunity there for LSU to take a step forward. I don't think that it is as cut and dry as, hey, he's got to make the playoff or he's going to be fired. I think he's owed too much money to do that. But to your point, Carl, I think the intensity really ratchets up on Brian Kelly this year. Whether he wants to deflect from it or not, if this is a team that goes 8-4 at the end of the season with the talent that they have, with the talent that they've brought in via the transfer portal, there are going to be a lot of unhappy people. And because Brian Kelly is just, I think, a generally unlikable figure in college football, he becomes a very easy target in that mind.
We talked about this a few weeks ago. How hard or how much heat from the Auburn and / Alabama contingent, the rest of SEC media, on Hugh Freeze? Because it just seems like the recruiting news, Carl said it a few times, I met a guy down in the Keys this weekend who's an Auburn fan, and all he says, all they're hearing is, all Hugh Freeze does is play golf.
It's just terrible optics for Hugh at the worst possible time because, you know, I think it's understandable of why Auburn recruiting is where it is right now. You have a lot of people in that Auburn side wait and see, where I don't think these first 2 years have gone how people imagined they would have when they hired Hugh Freeze from Liberty, given his past experience in this conference. They've spent big in recruiting. They've signed back-to-back top 10 classes. You do not do that at a cheap rate anymore. They were one of the more aggressive teams in the transfer portal this offseason. And for you to be struggling in recruiting and then that's juxtaposed with you going out there and playing a lot of golf, he's not the only coach to do this. He's just very public about it for whatever reason. This is not helping Hugh Freeze. And we talked a moment ago about the pressure that's mounting on Brian Kelly. I think that's ratcheted up to an even higher level with Hugh Freeze, where, you know, Auburn doesn't have to make the college football playoff this year, but they need to show that they're a good, competent football team, because they had no point in Hugh Freeze's first 2 years have they done that. And if they can't do it with this talent they've had on this roster, this is easily the most talented Auburn roster they've had probably since 2019 when Bo Nix was a freshman. You have real questions and concerns about the future direction of this program under Hugh Freeze, and the recruiting only makes that worse.
Connor, what did you think about what Lane Kiffin had to say? We talked last week, I think, about Austin Simmons. I think he could be the star or coming out party as far as the quarterback is concerned, a guy that people are aware of, but maybe he takes the league by storm. What do you think, Lane Kiffin, about what Lane Kiffin said today?
Yeah, I think LSU is one of the more difficult teams to figure out and project what they're going to be this season. You know, as much as I think you and I, Carl, we talked last week about how much we like Austin Simmons and what he brings to the table, Justin Dart was a first-round quarterback and did a lot of really good things for that program. And they have to replace Walter Nolan. They have to replace defensive end Princely Unumalian, who gave Georgia, I think, more trouble than any individual player did a season ago. And you wonder, okay, what can this team be? Now, the thing working in their favor, they have a very, very favorable schedule. Yes, they have to go to Athens. Yes, they have to play Oklahoma and LSU. But other than that Georgia game and maybe the LSU game, they're going to be favored in the rest of their contest. And there is a world, I think, where Austin Simmons comes out and plays really well early. Lane Kiffin has shown and earned, I think, the trust of, even though we have a heavy roster turnover every year, we know what we're looking for and how we're going to replace it. And I think that there is a world where right now, yes, Ole Miss might be the fifth or sixth team in that preseason pecking order behind Alabama, Texas, Georgia, LSU, and then they're in that South Carolina tier. Because of the schedule, I think there's a world where Ole Miss may be able to sneak in there and grab one of those college football playoff spots. Even though a year ago, we were all sort of talking about them as a team that, hey, they have to go out there and do this. Weren't able to do so. I think because of the schedule and how favorable it was last year, it flips. Still a very manageable schedule in my mind. If Austin Simmons is as good as Carl thinks he is, That Ole Miss team is going to be in the playoff hunt in late November.
It's our man Connor Riley, guys, from Dog Nation. I think almost every other week we're asking you about Gunnar Stockton. Can he be that guy? You know, can he be Stetson Bennett? They're going to have that preseason that'll come out. All the media elite down at the Omni will vote on the preseason All-SEC. How's it going to look when the season's over? Is Gunnar Stockton going to be one of the top five quarterbacks in the SEC?
I don't think he's going to be one of the top five quarterbacks. And, you know, while you were making your point there, Mike, I was thinking, if Gunnar Stockton's the sixth best quarterback in the SEC next season, Georgia's going to be in fantastic shape. Like, they don't need him to go out there and be a Joe Burrow. They don't, in my opinion, need him to go out there and be the best quarterback in the league for them to reach the college football playoff and potentially win a national title. Now, they obviously need him to be good. They need him to take care of the football in a way Carson Beck didn't a season ago. And really, in those Texas and Notre Dame games, while they were tough circumstances, he didn't necessarily do a great job of that there either. But Gunnar Stockton, in my mind, if he could give you like a Jake Fromm in 2017 type performance, where he manages the ship, he doesn't make a lot of mistakes, he's able to rely on the talent around him, there's a world where, yes, he's only the sixth or seventh best quarterback, and yes, that's going to lead us talking all season. Is he good enough to win a round? But I think if he's that capable of Georgia, where he's a middle of the tier quarterback and he's not actively hurting you, I think that Georgia is talented enough around him for them to accomplish the goals that they need to. And, you know, it's so fascinating tomorrow. Gunner's going to be the first quarterback we hear from in the morning. He's going to say virtually nothing. Arch Manning's the last quarterback we're going to hear from at the end of the day from Texas.
Right.
And the juxtaposition between those two guys and the way they're talked about, even though to what they've done in college is very similar, could not be more different at this point in time.
Yeah, look, and speaking of pressure, Sark's got a good enough team to win it. I don't know if they will. A lot of people I'm talking to back in Texas are like, yeah, they're coming back to the SEC championship game. Okay, they did that last year, and they got beat up twice by a better Georgia football team. What are your expectations? I'm not going to ask you what you're voting because Mike mentioned it. You guys are going to have to vote. But what are your expectations? If I told you, will Texas be back in the mix? Because that's the prediction right now. A top three team in the country, certainly one of the top teams in the SEC.
Yeah, so you look at what Texas lost a season ago. They lose their starting quarterback. They lose multiple wide receivers. Most of their offensive line has to be replaced. This is a year where I think we're going to get a really good look at what is the culture like at Texas. And if they're able to sustain and play really well this year, like I think they will be able to, that's going to be huge for them. Now, they actually, despite last year, I think, having a very generous schedule, they have a very tricky road schedule this year at Ohio State, at Florida, at Georgia. All those games are going to be tough. And while, yes, there's a world where they lose all three, and if they do that, they're probably not making the college football playoff, I don't think that that's going to happen. And this is a year for Texas where for so long it's been a Texas back. Well, they've made two straight college football playoff semifinals. They made it to the SEC championship year one. If they're able to go 10-2 again this year, make the college football playoff, you know, yes, so much of this is going to be can they win a championship, especially with Arch Manning as their quarterback. But it's everything else around there where if they're able to get to that point, that's a huge success for Sarkisian and for Texas and what they're able to do. Where, yeah, some years you're going to need all the pieces to align and things to fall into place. Georgia experienced that in 2021. Ohio right. State, you saw that a season ago. If they're able to do all that, that's huge for Texas because you're able to show that you're able to sustain at that level. And if you do that long enough, at some point the pieces are going to fall into place and you're going to get over that hump and win a national title.
And Connor, just wrapping up, the South Carolina Gamecocks went 9-3, big win over Texas A&M, should have beat Alabama, better field goal kicker. They move onward and upward with Lenora Sellers. Are they going to plateau? Is that as good as it gets there at Williams-Brice Stadium?
I think plateau is a great word to use there, Mike, because you look at what made that team successful. Yes, Lenora Sellers making big plays late last year. But that defense was really, really good. They had, I think, five guys drafted off of it. That's not nothing. How they go about replacing those defensive guys, I think, is going to determine what their ceiling is. Because there is a world where they get into the college football playoff. But, man, you look at that schedule. They got to play Texas A&M once again. They got to play Clemson at the end of the season. They get Alabama and LSU and Ole Miss. Those are three really tough SEC conference games. And so they're going to have to find a way to navigate what is a trickier schedule compared to the rest of the league. But they've got maybe perhaps the best player in the league in Lenora Sellers once as well. So if they're able to navigate that, if Sellers is able to raise the offensive floor a little bit from where last year I think it was a little boom or bust, if they're able to be more consistent there, that is a team that I think can elevate itself to another level and get into the college football playoff.
Well, it's going to be a fun week. Can't wait to see tomorrow, and I know you're going to be all over it, Connor, as Kirby, and you said it, Gunner, get a chance to address the media. Curious about Hugh Freeze, and then as the week goes on, obviously we get a chance to hear from Kalen DeBoer, who I think, again, has got to get them back to the playoffs with Alabama. Great stuff. Tell the people where they can follow you and follow all the things you're covering.
Yeah, you guys can follow me on Twitter at @KConnorReilly. We'll have a ton of stuff out of there tomorrow. Kirby goes bright and early in the day, so wake up, be ready for that.
I guess this means you're not going to Beyonce tonight.
No, I am not going to Beyonce tonight.
All right, I'm just making sure. I had to ask, Connor.
All right, brother, go Dawgs.
Take care.